Hello and welcome to AP Table Talk, a podcast where we explore board games and what makes them interesting to us. My name is Brian, and I'm joined by someone who has to hold back his awesomeness so as not to intimidate people. My co-host and cousin, Dave.
That is
Dave,
me.
How's it going?
I'm Dave. Good to be back, Ry. Good to be back.
All right, yeah, it's been a little bit since we did our last episode.
Mm-hmm.
A little bit of a run there. I guess it's summertime when we're recording this, so life is keeps us busy.
Life is getting in the way. It is doing stuff.
Yeah,
that's
yeah,
the best way I can describe it.
Yeah, but I know you were out camping. Do you bring some board games when you're camping?
I did. I did bring some board games.
Nice. I would expect nothing less from you.
Not having to do with this episode, but you remember our grid coverage episode a while ago?
Yes.
I brought this game that's a solo kind of puzzly game called Genius Square. I don't know if you've seen it before, but I've got like addicted to it. It is like grid coverage incarnate, but it is using like polyominoes, like Tetris pieces. It is very fun. I brought it for my friend's kids, but it was one of the games that we were playing for most of the weekend because play it in like seconds.
Nice. Yeah, I like those short ones, especially for something where you're out camping too. That's definitely what you want, right? Just something short and quick, simple.
No cards either. So everything could potentially get wet and it's totally fine.
I bring Hive for a lot of that stuff. It doesn't generally get played, but I can just throw it in a bag.
Yeah.
Because I've got my little Hive pocket.
Mm-hmm. I did bring Bonanza with me, but we didn't get it on the
Bonanza.
Table. But that, ironically, has only cards.
So. Yes, I've played that one. I didn't like the whole like having to keep the cards in order because I immediately mentally want to reorganize the cards in my hand. So
gotta fight
just
that feeling.
Rule, yeah, I know that rule just messes it up for me. But so what is our mechanic for this episode?
All right, so we are gonna cover rondelles for this episode. Brad, do you mind giving us the personal overview on rondelle?
All right, my first thoughts on the rondelle mechanic. So when I think of like a classical rondelle mechanic, I'm thinking of generally a circle kind of cut into slices, and you have your piece, each player has their piece, and you move a certain number of spaces, like, you know, 1 to 3 spaces around there. Each space corresponds to an action or maybe resources that you get. I would almost classify it as a subset of action selection.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I brought that. I wrote that down in some of my notes before. Mm-hmm. I'm going to read the definition for rondelle directly off of Board Game Geek, which is where we're taking this from. So you're close here, Brian. It says here, quote, "The available actions are represented as pie wedges in a circle. Each player has one or more tokens on rondelle's wedges. On their turn, they may move their token around the rondelle and perform the action indicated by the wedge where they stop. It is typically more costly to move further around the rondelle." So, like you said, Brian, a lot of action selection going here, but sort of like a linear action selection. We talked a little bit about this with Moncala, but I think rondelle is different enough to stand on its own.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah. I agree. Okay, well, we'll get into our first segment here where we talk about some examples, right?
Major examples.
Should we do our roll for initiative?
Yeah, so if you are listening to this episode for the first time and you're not familiar with AP Table Talk, Brian and I both have D20s, and we're going to roll them, and whoever rolls highest will get initiative and will lead first. So, Brian, I will roll when you're ready.
All right, I'm ready.
3, 2, 1, roll. I have 14.
I got 8.
All right, so I will lead off.
Go ahead.
All right, so I'm going to start off with the first one for major examples. And the one we agreed upon ahead of time, Brian, was I'm going to talk about my most noteworthy, biggest rondelle game, in my opinion. That's right?
Yep.
Okay, so I'm going to have to go with Patchwork because this is the one you recommended to me. I remember when we first started playing board games. It's not ironically the very first game I played with my girlfriend at the time, now wife, on our second date. And I basically said during that second date, I was like, we're gonna play a board game. You probably have never played it before, but this is going to determine the future of our relationship, right? No pressure, but we got to play this Patchwork game.
It's definitely a good two-player game.
It's a solid
My wife game. Still enjoys that one.
Yeah, so. I have a couple of games I'm always playing on BGA, and they're like Splendor, Azul, and Patchwork, just because they're very easy to get on the table. So it's noteworthy for me because of that story with my girlfriend, now wife. It's also one of the first modern games that I got introduced to, and Brian introduced that to me. Like you said, Brian, it's a really easy two-player game to get players into. Like, unlike other games where it's best at three or four players, this one it's strictly two players. I think a really good asset to this game is that the theme is so benign. You know, like, yes. I feel like you'll be hard-pressed to find someone that's like, I do not want to make a quilt right now. It's like, everyone wants to make a quilt when you're making when you're playing
Patchwork.
Get
those buttons away from me.
And what I think is really cool about it, and we talked a little bit about this in a past episode about the polyomino shapes, it's still thinky, it's accessible, it's available, and I think it's a really great way to get people into the hobby without really overwhelming them. That's really why I like Patchwork. That's my number one. How about you?
Yeah, actually, and before we move on, you told me an interesting anecdote about the development of Patchwork. Mm-hmm. Do you want to recount that story again?
Oh, yeah. So Patchwork, I think this is the story you're referring to, Brian. It's designed by UA Rosenberg, who is a big name in modern tabletop games.
Not really known for simpler, smaller games like this.
No, definitely not known for that. But I had read that UA Rosenberg also designed a Feast for Odin, and Patchwork was a auxiliary like mini game or mechanic that he had designed originally for a Feast for Odin, and just so happened he wanted to continue developing it, and it just became its own separate game, enough to be able to stand on its own. Brian, was that the anecdote you were talking
about? I didn't remember exactly all the details, so that's why I wanted you to recount it. But I just thought that was really cool that kind of this little, and I consider it a pretty popular game. It's popular enough to have been rethemed a couple times. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. I definitely think that's up there. That's a good choice for a noteworthy Rondel game.
All right, right. Yeah, how about you?
All right. So I know we had just had a discussion after our last episode that we were going to keep our, try to limit ourselves and keep our examples to one game each per section. Mm-hmm. But I do have a quick like runner up that I wanted to put in this section, but I didn't actually pick it, which is, I always get the pronunciation messed up on this one. I think that one of the biggest Rondel games is Teotihuacan. Is that
Teotihuacan?
City of Gods?
Yeah.
Teotihuacan. Mm-hmm. I do think that's an extremely popular game that uses the Rondel mechanic. Mm-hmm. I know you're not crazy about it. I would say it's kind of middling for me as well. Mm-hmm. It's interesting, but it's definitely not up there. So I just wanted to put that one in. I definitely think it is one of the bigger Rondel games, but my choice for, the biggest one that I think of is Great Western Trail.
Mm. Oh yeah.
Which, is kind of an interesting way that a Rondel is included, in that the Rondel is kind of the track that you actually move along. Mm-hmm. So in Great Western Trail, you're a rancher, getting your cattle and delivering it. The places always escape me. But I'm sure you'll remember.
It's all
where you're delivering it to,
cities in the Great Western, cattle drive.
And as you cycle around, you're adding more spaces to the path that you go around, which is your rondel, mm-hmm, essentially. Mm-hmm. So I thought that was really neat, but that's definitely it's one of my favorites, and also I think is a pretty popular Rondel game.
Right. And I remember the first time we played that, Brian, that was at a PAX East. I'm forgetting the year, but I remember we had taken it out of the library and we're like, we're going to play Great Western Trail. It's highly rated. We're going to play it. Teach it to ourselves. I think that first game, including the teach, took us like 6 hours to play.
Yeah, I think we were, I believe we came back from eating lunch or something, or was that one of the ones we did first?
I think it might've been like right after lunch.
It was after lunch and we essentially played it and then we're like, I'm starving.
Yeah, it's like, it's like 9 o'clock already. But it was, I don't regret it. And I think the BJ adaptation of it is really good, but it's just like a lot going on.
There's a lot of setup too. And I know there's a second edition now that incorporates a lot of, and I've heard it also streamlined some of it. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. So I wouldn't mind trying that out at some point. Yeah. I don't know when, but I do enjoy that game. And I think the BJ version is a good way to try it, since you don't have to do as much of the bookkeeping. Yeah. So,
and I would say the same thing for Teotihuacan that you brought up before. I think I would agree. Only play the BGA version because of the setup.
I've never played the actual one, but Or no, yeah. No, we haven't played, or we haven't played it together.
I played the actual one in person, and okay. I think it has really great table presence. And, you know, it gets people interested in the game, but I just don't want to be involved with the setup because it takes a lot.
I know they just kickstarted a deluxified version of it.
Yeah, I saw that on Kickstarter.
But yeah, it's a big game, and I don't know how much it would hit the table. It wouldn't be a first choice for me.
Right.
All right, so we'll move on to the first Rondell game that you played.
Okay.
You can start us off on this one as well.
All right, goes back to me. So it's the same game I brought up for the first one, which is Patchwork, because I was really familiar with board game mechanics before. So I got introduced to Patchwork, which also had the Rondell mechanic. Like we brought up before when I was talking about Genius Square, it has grid coverage, which is, I think, a really positive form of feedback for players because you're covering those different parts of the grid. Patchwork is in theme too, because you're making a quilt out of these different patches. Something though that I forgot to bring up before, Brad, that I think is pretty cool about Patchwork is that it has unorthodox player turns, because really you are spending two types of resources to buy those patches. You're spending buttons, which are your currency, and you're also spending time around the time track, because if you've never played Patchwork before, if you're behind on the time track, you get to go again until you have passed the other player's marker. So I think that is enough of a difference for a lot of people who have not played a lot of modern tabletop games to see something like cool and iterative that's based on this particular game. And I think what's also new to me overall about Patchwork is that you can still win having a negative score. You just can't be as negative as your opponent. So the unorthodox turns, I think the relatively low scoring for Patchwork are all cool, unique things that I didn't really see in other games. So my number two example for first Rondell game for me is going to be Patchwork.
All right, nice. And that's great, because since you use the same game, that offsets me doing two games in the first segment there. So, so for first Rondell game for myself, I also picked Patchwork. Mm-hmm. So Patchwork was 2014 that it came out. Now you mentioned that I suggested that game to you, mm-hmm. which is odd because I'm wondering where I played it then, because generally we play games together at PAX, or you discover them first.
I think you had just told me we were talking about like two player games. It might've been the first PAX we went to. Remember when you introduced Hive to me?
I guess there were a few smaller games, because I definitely still kind of hunt down the two-player games to play with my wife.
Yep.
Because I don't have as regular of a gaming group, or at least I hadn't had one for a long time. Mm-hmm. That you were able to kind of have your groups more often.
Yep.
So I was always on the hunt for those two-player games.
Mm-hmm. It was.
And now also you've talked about Patchwork twice now, so. Uh-huh. Most of the points that I think I would talk about, I believe you've covered. Mm-hmm. I do like that balance of time and earning the buttons. Mm-hmm. I think that's generally the part of the puzzle I'm usually looking at the most that I like. Yep. So the only thing I'll add is what time track do you like better, the squared one or the round one?
I almost exclusively use the squared one because I find it easier to track. Both,
I agree,
in person and also online.
Yes,
and I
do not like the round.
I don't like the round one at all. Brian, I also don't know if you played on BGA. You know, they have the Americana version.
Yes, I saw that.
I feel like that is also like it just hurts my eyes to look at it because there's so many contrasting colors. It may be better for people that have like, low visibility or need like greater contrast. But I like the original version with the square track. That's for me.
Yeah, and I know there's a Halloween one, but I haven't seen what it looks like.
That one's even more contrasty than the Americana version. Yeah.
Yeah, I just like the original.
Yeah, me too. I like, why mess with something that works? I still play I call it vanilla Patchwork.
Yes.
Yeah.
All right. Okay, well, that's our first Rondell games that we've played. Let's move on to your favorite Rondell game.
Okay, so number three for me, favorite Rondell game. Brad, I don't think you have this on your list. I'd be surprised if you do, because this is, I would say, my favorite Rondell game. As much as I played Patchwork, I brought this back to the table with my group because we were doing some research for this episode. And I'm going to have to say Space Park. Have you ever played Space Park?
I have not played Space Park.
So Space Park is I think it's as pure of a Rondell game as you can get. It's designed by Henry Audubon, who designed Parks, Trails, and Kingswood. I don't know if you played any of those games, but if any listeners have.
Parks sounds familiar.
Yeah, Parks
That's a newer one, right?
Yeah, that's Keymaster, and that was also on Kickstarter. I don't know. I did not back it then, but I believe some people in my group did, so I did not back it. But the interesting part about all these games is that there is some element, I would say, in everything but Parks and Trails, where you're, it's more like Takedo, where you're moving along a road. Everything else involves some sort of rondel. So I think this is Henry's, like, you know, like go-to mechanic. And the reason I really like this is because, like his other games, Space Park is about visiting parks, but like in space, you know, so not national parks, parks like that would exist on like different planets or moons and everything else. So you're controlling these different spaceships, you're going to different locations, or you, that wherever the spaceships are, you resolve that location, which is get like different types of crystals or turning crystals or in experience points or anything else. And then you move the spaceship to the next available spot that's not occupied by another spaceship. So why I really like it is really cool art, really cool theme. And the turns are so fast. Like when you look at this game, you're like, okay, it looks pretty cool. Like, you know, like let's get it to the table, but it's snappy. I would say that I could probably play a four player game of Space Park in the same amount of time I could play a game of Patchwork. That's why.
Oh, I really like it. Okay. Yeah. I definitely like turns to move quickly. Mm-hmm. All right. So my favorite rondel game, I was on the fence on this one because I think it is, it kind of straddles the definition of rondel, at least the one that we spoke about at the beginning of the episode. Yep. Now, it is classified as rondel on BGG, and I think I would call it a rondel game. I don't know if we played this together. It's one that I kickstarted. Okay. The designer is Johnny Pack. It's Coloma.
Oh, Coloma.
Have you played Coloma?
I'm familiar with it, but I've never played it before.
Okay, so Coloma, it's about trying to strike it rich in the California frontiers, gold mining. You have a few different ways, like it's kind of have multiple paths to earning gold or victory points. And the way that the action selection works with the rondel in that one is that there are five spaces, and each space has a regular action and a boom action. And they have this neat little piece that kind of goes around the rondel that kind of covers a space up and changes what one of the actions are. And they use magnets, which are, everyone kind of gravitates towards that. It uses a magnet instead of those like plastic hinges into the board. But the catch is for this one, instead of moving sequentially around the rondel, everybody does a simultaneous blind choice of the space they want to go to. So they're numbered 1 to 5. You have your little action selector. Everyone picks, shows at the same time. You put your little guy on your action, and the action that has the most people on it gets a bust. It has another piece on the little turntable that covers the boom action. So if your space has the most people on it, you do not get the boom action. So you kind of want to go where not everybody's going. It's a neat little twist on the mechanic, but I like the simultaneous action selection on that one. And then once everyone's chosen, it goes around each of the spaces, and everyone gets to do their actions or whatever. So
if I'm understanding correctly, you want to choose an action that you don't think everyone else will choose because you don't want it to be popular. Right.
I mean, obviously it's situational, but generally speaking, to get the best action economy, that's what you want to do. But there's certain times when everyone just wants this because that's the most efficient. So you can think of it that way, as you don't want to get penalized, or some people will think of it as, well, you're only getting that main action. And if you happen to pick the place where not everybody goes, you'll get a bonus action.
Oh, I see. Okay.
So but, that one's interesting. I backed, they just recently put an expansion out. So I backed that as well. I've got a few plays of that, of Coloma, and I'd like to hit the table more. I might bring that to my gaming group when it's my choice next, but I kind of forgot about it until I was looking up stuff for this episode. So
Funny story about Johnny Pack. I think I told you this, Brian. I was doing a BGG trade, and Johnny Pack messaged me. He had a game that I had that he wanted, and he had a game that I wanted. And I saw that his username was like some variation of Johnny Pack. And I was like, are you the same Johnny Pack that designs these other games that I have? Like, I forget.
Like Merchant's Cove or something like that?
No.
One of his bigger ones? Fistful of Meeples?
I can't think of it right now. I have to look for it. But it was Lions of Lydia. That's a it's like a bag building game. But I remember I messaged him and we traded, and I was like, oh, this is the first time I ever traded with another like well-known designer. So I was pretty pretty rad to be able to trade with him. But I had a question, Brian, about Coloma. So how do you resolve two questions? One, how do you resolve ties if there's a tie for most popular? And two, can you play the game two players?
You can play the game two players. There's even a solo. So they have kind of a automated player, I believe, for two player to and it basically just randomly picks a space to kind of gunk up the rondelle a little bit. I believe ties it goes that piece that goes around that changes the actions, it'll go to the one, it'll block the one closest to wherever that is going next. Or something to that effect. But
So there's a
it was definitely a neat mechanic. The game, I do like the game a lot, but that is, it's definitely using a rondel in a unique way that I haven't seen done before.
Yeah, that sounds kind of cool. I know you like blind bidding too, so that seems like where it's right up your alley.
Blind bidding.
Cool.
Okay.
All right. So that wraps examples. Up
our examples there. So we'll move on to our likes and dislikes.
Yeah, sure.
Of the rondel mechanic. We'll do our roll here.
All right. So we're going to roll again for initiative. We have two d20s. So in 3, 2, 1, roll.
I got 18.
I got 9. So you got all
right. Okay. So we'll start off with some likes. Okay. So the first like I have is, I like that it creates some tension, and that by that I mean by limiting kind of what your available options are. It creates that tension. It makes the choice you're making a little more meaningful. So I always like that kind of ramping up the tension. You know that I can only pick out of these three and. I have to make it kind of count. So I definitely like that about the mechanic.
Nice. And do you have a specific game that you wanted to reference for?
I mean, it kind of applies to all of them. You know, I was thinking, I've only played it once. We backed it together, Tiny Epic Pirates.
Yes, and but it's still in shrink for me.
You should give it a shot. It's pretty good. I will probably talk about that game more in variants, but that one definitely, I'd say anything using that classic definition of, rondel that we talked about, you're going to have that kind of increased tension because of your limited choices.
Right. That is somewhat related to my like. Did you have something else, Brian, or should I go for my like?
You can go ahead and then I'll do one after you. We'll just go back and forth.
So it's somewhat related to yours. I called mine Cleaner Decision Framework. And again, since I listed Spacebar as my favorite rondel game, I like that there's only three spaceships and it's on this very like limited modular board. So I think you would like that aspect of this game too, because you can set it up however you'd like. And it's basically just like, these are the three things that you can do on your turn. You know, it may not be a lot.
Right.
There is a mechanic that's involved later that allows you to move some of the spaceships prior to you resolving your action if none of those like are ideal. But I like the fact that like when it's my turn, it's like, okay, well, I can get like two yellow crystals, one purple crystal, or one blue crystal. That's it. That's
right.
It. And then I move the spaceship and my turn is over and it goes on to the next person. I like that cleaner decision framework. I think it makes the game much more approachable for people that are not used to modern tabletop games. But, you know, even as like an experienced player, I still like having those very clear decisions I can make on my turn.
Yeah. And actually, my next like kind of relates to that in terms of talking about like, okay, well, you have those three options. I think that it is a very intuitive, easy to understand mechanic. And it kind of keeps the flow of the game going. So, for example, in Patchwork, there's a lot of pieces. When the game starts, all those pieces are out there, but you really only have to look at the three next pieces and how it can fit. And I mean, obviously you can look ahead, but, generally for kind of reducing that analysis paralysis, you just like, okay, well, just look at those three pieces. What's the best one you can get out of that? Until you dig deeper into the strategies.
Yeah. I think that, that You're building off of my response, Brian. I'm wondering if you're looking at the same document. But my like is that my number two is opponent's choices slightly influence your options. And the game I reference here is one called Sabika. Did you ever play that game, Brian?
No, I have not.
So Sabika is one I played at PAX Unplugged this past year. And it's a rondel, workers moving around. And I played it a three-player game. So based on where other workers are, they can determine where your legal in optimal moves are. Mm-hmm. And since it's only, it plays up to four players, but since it was basically three players, I just knew that, you know, when it was coming up to me, I just rank choice ordered my options. I'm like, okay, this is ideally what I would like to do. But if that's not available, this is the choice I'll take. And if that's not available, this will be the third one. I was kind of like anticipating and playing around with the game states. This is, you know, like going to be reduced a lot if you're playing heads up because, you know, the game state can only change so much in between turns. But I like the fact that at least how I've seen it implemented in this game, you know that, you know, potentially your optimal move will not be available. So you have to plan accordingly. But like I could see that being totally ruined if there is more than four players involved because it just the game state would change too much and you couldn't really do any planning, which I think is okay for some games. But for a game of the weight of Sabika, I think it's useful to like limit it to these four players. And I think it does it pretty well.
Right, right. Yeah. Okay. And talking about planning, that kind of leads into my next like. I believe it adds a type of strategic depth that I like in two ways. One is that plan, being able to kind of plan ahead, and also being able to anticipate what your opponent's next moves might be. And again, it kind of applies to anything that follows that classic definition of a rondel, like in Great Western Trail, you can almost kind of figure out how you're going to chain your moves to kind of to create those chain of actions so that when you land on in three turns, you know, you're going to have, okay, I'll have these cattle that I can then trade for this and then be able to trade them in at the end of the run or whatever. And I think Patchwork is one, although considered a simpler game, it does allow, because you have that shared marker that moves around for your pieces choice, it's very easy to be able to anticipate what your, well, you definitely can anticipate what your opponent's choices are going to be based on the piece you choose and looking at their board. Since it's a two-player game, you can kind of keep track of their board a little easier and be like, okay, well, if I leave them here, I know they don't have enough buttons for any of these pieces. And that type of almost action denial, which is, you know, I always like conflict in my games. So being able to anticipate what their options will be and kind of react off of that.
Right.
Definitely something that the rondel allows me to do that I like in games.
And I that leads into my last like, which is you were talking before about Teotihuacan, City of Gods, which I think is, for the most part, at least the rondel games that I researched leading up to this episode, is that the focusing on the direction totally helps. Like, I couldn't imagine playing Teotihuacan if I had to imagine going clockwise and counterclockwise. Like,
right.
There's already a lot going on, and I'm like, I just need to focus on a direction, and I just need to go that way. Yeah. So I think, like you said before, looking at what your player's options are, I don't really look at, like, my opponent's board for Patchwork for, like, peace denial, but I think it's important to know for... you know, like the number of buttons that someone has. So that
yeah, but I probably look more about the buttons that they have more than their actual quilt.
Yeah, like look, or trying to determine like what is the optimal piece placement for them, because I think that's just too much for me. I don't want to think about that. I'd rather just think about my board. But what I like about Teotihuacan, even though I'm not a huge fan of the game, is that I only really have to focus on that clockwise motion. I know that's not, there are other rondel games that don't have that exclusive clockwise motion, but I'm glad that I don't have to think about too many different game states when I'm examining that game.
Right.
Yeah.
That actually finished off my likes as well. Mm-hmm. So that was it for your likes?
Yeah, I only had three likes. Should we go into dislikes?
We will switch over to dislikes. Okay. So now I would say mine are fairly nitpicky because I mostly, for the most part, I like rondels. So my first one I enjoy my thematic games, and I would say that, generally speaking, they are kind of arbitrary, and just it's not really a thematic mechanic mm-hmm. for the game. There's nothing really that kind of makes it make sense in the theme. Mm-hmm. I don't mind it as a mechanic, and I enjoy it, but just again, kind of a nitpick that if you're going for something that's really heavily themed and the way that you choose your actions, I don't really know that it is very that I can think of any kind of theme that actually makes it adds to the theme of right. a game.
I'm blanking on it, but I feel like there's a game that is pie themed.
Okay.
It has a rondelle, and I feel like that would be very thematic. But I
right.
don't know
something with
called.
Pizza in it, maybe, or something too.
Something. Well, do you remember way back when we played a game called Pie Town? You remember that?
I think
it might
that.
Have been out of Renegade Studios or something. I think it had I think it had a rondelle in it, but I'm not sure.
Maybe.
We only played it once, I remember. It was kind of, to be honest, a little bit forgettable when we played it. I think it had a rondelle, and if so, I feel like that would be very thematic.
Yeah, maybe.
Yeah.
I don't remember. I remember playing it. I don't remember the game, so mm-hmm. I agree on the forgettable part, at least for me.
Yeah. Oh, I remember you had like a secret ingredient for your pie you kept inside of like a little like cardboard
right,
pie slicers, right. or it might have been a safe or something. I don't know. But now it makes me want to play the game again because I feel like...
Yeah, just to kind of remember it at least.
Exactly. All right, should I try my dislike, Bri?
Yeah, go ahead.
Okay, so my first dislike is, I titled this, Rondell is the opponent of open drafting. Because, like you said, with Rondell, you're really only, for a lot of the selections of games that we're talking about for this episode, you are limited to the individual options you can take based on the game state of the Rondell. We talked about Sabika before, where different workers really... restrict where you can go or what your optimal move is. I say that like Rondell is the quote unquote opponent to open drafting. And I'm going to compare right. this specifically like to Lords of Waterdeep, which we played a lot where, you know, like if you're the first player, you got every option available on the map for you. Whereas if you're following up, you right. know, all your options are going to be, you know, reduced.
Right, right, right.
And I think that, you know, both games have a different design philosophy involved with them, but I think that in terms of accessibility and approachability, I would not bring Lords of Waterdeep to the table, but I would bring a more accessible, like Rondell game, because I feel like those decisions are already kind of structured to help people make them and not be, you know, paralyzed by the analysis of it.
Right.
Yeah.
Okay. So my next dislike is again, it's kind of dependent on how the Rondell is implemented. And actually, I realized we didn't really talk about this kind of variant to a Rondell, but it is pretty common, I believe. Generally, in a Rondell game, so you're moving X number of spaces around the Rondell, let's say 1 to 3. But oftentimes, there is a method where you can break that rule, whether it's you can pay extra to move one extra space beyond the limit or whatever that is. And I believe that adding that, it is possible to lead to a kind of a runaway leader problem where being able to pay that extra gives you more options, which then allows you to earn more resources in order to be able to pay to move and be able to play more optimally than if you are behind and are unable to pay that extra. Again, this is more a theoretical dislike than anything that I can actually think of a game where I've noticed it significantly.
It's more of like, you'd be angry if a game had this.
If it had that, yeah, I could see it thematically.
Yeah.
Theoretically being a problem, but I don't have an example of a game that does that.
Oh, I see. My second dislike, it plays on that a little bit because I again refer back to Teotihuacan and City of Gods, and that there's an inherent cost to going to that next space. And like you could look at my board and be like, well, I think is it Coco in Teotihuacan in order to take a space that already is occupied by a lot of high level workers? Do you remember?
I think the more other colors that are on a space, the more you have to pay to take that action.
And by more other colors, you mean other workers?
Other players.
Workers? Oh, okay.
Yeah.
So there's an inherent cost in going there. And, that factors into your decision framework, right? Like I could go there at greater cost, or I could go to a different space that has no workers and it's free or low cost. I think that a lot of that decision is going to be based on like how the designer set it up, where like, is there a resource necessary to go to the next space, or is there a way to mitigate someone that has a lot of resources in which they can choose? Again, yeah, I can't think of a specific example, but
Speaking to your example of Teotihuacan, so if you move to a space and there's two other players there, you become the third color. So I think I don't remember exactly how they're, but generally speaking, it's you have to pay three cocoa to play the action, but the counter to that is that the other action you can take on a space is, instead of taking the space's action, you can collect cocoa, and you get, based on the number of different players there, so you get more cocoa. So if there's a space with a lot of different players, you can use it to get more cocoa.
Oh, I see. Oh, yeah. Well. That's a good example of being able to balance it out.
Of a design decision to balance that problem,
So, because cocoa is going to be the main, like, currency or resource.
So my last dislike, again, is kind of theoretical. I don't have an example I can think of, but and it kind of, I think I had the same issue with the Moncala mechanic, in that if there isn't a lot of variability in the rondel, or if the game time is too long, I think that it could feel very like samey or repetitive. But most of our examples either are shorter games where that isn't a problem, or they have a way of changing the rondel throughout the game so that it doesn't have that problem.
Right. Yeah, I think that it is, for me, my third dislike, it is not so much about the differences in like the game setup, but more about how the game state can change too much in between turns. And I talked a little bit about that with Sabika and other things. I think that my favorite game, Space Park, kind of mitigates this a little bit by using that modular board and by including these fast travel passes, which allow you to change the locations of those spaceships in case like the board is not set up very well for you to take an optimal move. And the way that I played it, it's people save those up so that like later in the game, they could make a game winning move by using those fast travel
passes. Yeah, that game sounds interesting. I'll have to look that one up because I'll have to figure out where I can try that one out.
Well, next time we get together, we probably play it. I have my copy. Good.
Oh yeah, that's right. You're my secondary library. So
exactly.
All right. Well, that was it for dislikes for me. Mm-hmm. That was your last one.
That's my last one.
Okay, so from here we go on to kind of twists and variations. Mm-hmm. We have mentioned a few as we kind of talked about different games. Mm-hmm. But we can go through those. I forget if we do another roll for this one.
Let's do another roll. Okay. So we got a 2d20s. I'm ready to roll when you are, bro.
I'm ready. Go ahead. I got a 4.
I got a 2. So you get to go.
All right. Okay, so the first one I will talk about is one we just talked about. So being able to pay to move extra spaces. Mm-hmm. So I have two different versions of that variation that I have examples of. So one where you kind of can pay a resource to move an extra space. Mm-hmm. A game that we played in preparation for this episode on Board Game Arena, Tiny Farms.
Yep.
And they gave each player, I think it was 3 cubes that you can spend at any point during the game to move an additional space around things. So one where there's an actual currency for it.
Yeah.
I briefly mentioned Tiny Epic Pirates. So you have not played that one yet?
I have not played Tiny Epic Pirates.
Okay. So the way the rondel works in that one is actually pretty interesting. Each player has their own rondel, that is kind of randomized pieces. You start with a crew of, or 3 crew members. And each one is on a bonus space. So one gives you extra movement, one gives you extra attack power, and I can't remember what the third one is. And then your captain kind of is the thing that is, you move your spaces around the rondel. But you can take one of your crew members from their bonus space and move it to a space on the rondel in order to skip that space.
Oh, okay.
So at the cost of reducing some, like, your movement or your attack power. So I thought that was an interesting way. And you have to wait till your captain makes it around the rondel back to the space where the crew member is in order to get that crew member back.
Oh, okay.
So I thought that was actually a really interesting way of kind of a currency going back and forth on your own board of being able to kind of skip spaces on the rondel.
Yeah, I think that makes it an interesting decision framework too, right? Mm-hmm. Because by taking that crew member off, they're not doing something on your ship that you could potentially have them be doing.
Yeah. I actually liked Tiny Epic Pirates.
Does it eclipse Tiny Epic Galaxies for you? Because that's still my favorite.
Yeah. I don't know if, as much, I like Scott Alm's games, but I don't know if any of them really will beat out Tiny Epic Galaxies.
Yeah, that's true. All right, so for my twists and variations, number one for me, I got three of them, is I'd like to see more of the differences in resolve and then move, or move and then resolve. For basically all of the other Rondell games that I think we've mentioned so far, save for Teotihuacan, the other game that I played in my collection a lot in preparation for this is a game called Transmissions. And in Transmissions, again, it's a lot like Space Park, which there are robots that are moving around a board. No one owns those robots, but the way the game plays is you play a card in order to move that robot, and then you resolve the space at which it lands on. I feel that's a little bit like a wonky decision framework, because I think what makes Space Park move so fast is you just look at the board. Those are your options. You take that option, and then you move the spaceship afterwards. The bad part about that is when I played it, some of my friends in my game group would forget to move the spaceships in between turns. Whereas with, I think, Transmission, since you have to move it, then you resolve it. That's the new game state for the next player. So I would like to see more, you know, variety in resolve, then move, or move and then resolve.
Right.
Yeah.
Okay. So another kind of variation that we've are kind of talked about too is that the rondel spaces can be static. Mm-hmm. They can be random. So I'm kind of blanking on a static one right now, but so random, the game I just mentioned, Tiny Epic Pirates, at the beginning of the game, the places on your rondel are tokens. So you randomly shuffle those, and everybody has their own randomized rondel. Or they can change through the game. So my big game, Great Western Trail, the rondel is the board essentially. And as you put more places onto the board, the rondel itself changes. In that way, tiny farms that we played has that, it kind of has a dual layer board. So there's kind of holes on the top and different animals on the bottom. And as, what is it, after each round, I think you spin that board shuffles.
Yeah. We only played on BGA, so I don't know what it looks like.
I think it's after each round that board rotates so that the combination of which animals are in each rondel space changes. So there's definitely many different variations of what the rondel, I guess it's really a rondel in symbology only at that point.
Yeah.
Cause I think, isn't rondel just mean like a circle?
I believe so. When I was doing research for this, it also referred to like the piece on a knight's armor that is like at your armpit. It like,
oh,
because
really?
Like when you were striking an opponent, like with like a Western knight, you know, they have their arm above their head, then your armpit is exposed. And there's like a piece of armor there called the rondel that protects.
I feel like they're going more for using it where it came from, circle.
Maybe. Around. Yeah, I guess. I don't know. I also could be making this up. I don't know. I did this research like over a month ago. So who knows at this point. Is that your second variation, Brick?
That was my second variation. Yeah,
so
go for it.
I think this is unique because I never really thought about Great Western Trail as a rondel game. I went through the list on BGG of rondel games, and I didn't see BGG on it, because I was thinking about, for my twists and variations, number two is like, can we combine rondel and grid directions? And when I think about it, with Great Western Trail, you can have like, you can have intersections in Great Western Trail, right? Based on where you place like new tiles.
Right.
But the rondel can change, and it does change over the course of the game. It becomes longer, if anything else. And I think because by virtue of it becoming longer, there is more opportunities for you to, you know, trade in cattle or do other actions. There's just a lot of things going on in Great Western Trail. And I think that that ability to change one, the rondel, and also provide people like different directions is just a great new iterative way to use this specific mechanic.
Yeah, like it definitely gets longer. You can have the splits in the paths. Mm-hmm. You do still have to go in one direction, mm-hmm. but it definitely changes throughout the game. I'm not sure if that would work. If you could go in any direction, that would be, I guess it could work. I just don't know if I would consider that a rondel anymore.
Yeah. I don't know.
My one example of Coloma, it kind of comes down to semantics at that point, because that one is you're actually just picking the space. Mm-hmm. But I guess you could say that you're moving up to five spaces around. Like, right. It's blind, and you're just all moving simultaneously. But my third final variation I have here, actually, I guess I could think of a couple more, but is that you can have games like Teotihuacan, where mm-hmm. you have multiple pieces on the rondel, mm-hmm. or Great Western Trail, where you have a single piece on the rondel, your one player, mm-hmm. or and kind of just related to that, even Patchwork, where you share the piece that is going around the rondel. Mm-hmm. And I guess going back to that too, is you can have kind of the shared rondel or a personal rondel.
Oh yeah.
So we
talked about that when Moncala
shared personal Moncala. Yeah. So that's my kind of third variation I have listed here.
All right. My third variation is again, referencing back to Moncala. I'd like to see a mashup with this with some different mechanics. I think that the most common one that I've seen in the examples that I researched leading up to this episode is set collection. But I think we see set collection in a lot of modern tabletop games. So I can't really fault designers for wanting to pair, the rondel with set collection, because it's already a very, well-used mechanic. But I think some other cool things to pair it out with would be worker placement, because we see that in a lot of modern tabletop games. Yeah. I also said route and network building, not really thinking about Great Western Trail, which I think mm-hmm. also involves route and network building.
Yep.
But I think another cool thing that I would like to see between a rondel mashed up with another mechanic is a dexterity game. I can't really think of one right now, but I think that connecting those two might be interesting. I don't know what it would look like, but I think it would be cool.
It's not a rondel game, but for some reason my head just went to Twister.
Twister. I mean, it has a spinner, right?
Yeah, it's a spinner. It's spinner, not a rondel.
It's basically like the RNG game.
Yeah. But that's just where my head went when you connected those.
I think about, do you know about the Carcassonne expansion that turns it into a dexterity game? Are you familiar with this?
No,
it's like the circus one. Like, for those of you who are listening, Carcassonne is one of those, modern classic games. I would put it up there with like Azul and Ticket to Ride, Splendor, just like hot, like tabletop games that are, but are modern, and you can still find them like in mass market stores like Target. But like, I don't know who thought that including like flicking meeples for Carcassonne, which is already like an area control game, would make it different or better. But I just don't think it's like rated very highly on BGG. And I think that's the one that people make fun of, right?
I think I got to look into it, because I'm thinking of how annoying that, like, that game is essentially just a bunch of square tiles laid out. And now you're flicking things in it. Yeah, I got to look this one up.
Yeah.
So that sounds horrible. Yeah.
Not good. All right. Well, that's it.
I don't really have any more variations.
Yeah. I don't have anything else. I'm good.
Yeah. And the only other thing, like, I looked a little bit into, I didn't spend too much time looking into the evolution or kind of history of the rondel mechanic. Mm-hmm. Although I will say, it does seem like it's a rather new mechanic. The earliest kind of significant game I saw that used it was, I don't know how to pronounce it. Antigua? Antique. I don't know. 2005. Oh, okay. It's like a historical empire building game. Mm-hmm. It's got a decent rating on BGG 7.1, but that's the only one that had like a significant number of ratings.
Oh, yeah.
But yeah, 2005, which really isn't that that old for like an entire mechanic, which
Rondel's
a pretty big mechanic there, but
I haven't played this game, but I do see the rondel. I mean, it's there
1,000 in the the overall, which is pretty high rating.
Yeah.
Games.
Well, I mean, I like the mechanic for all the reasons we stated before, because it's very easy to see the board state, and I think it's really accessible and provides, you know, like some interesting decision structures for making those choices in the game.
Yeah. All right.
Shall we close it out?
All right. Yeah. So I hope you had a wheelie good time listening to our episode. Thanks for listening. We hope you you come back for another. That wraps up our Rondell episode of AP Table Talk. If you'd like to hear more content like this, please be sure to subscribe. You can also check out more of our content, projects, and other information about us on universityxp.com.
Thanks for joining us. We'd also love it if you took some time to rate the show. We live to live others with learning, so if you found this episode useful, consider sharing it with someone who could also benefit. Until next time, game on.